Warning: The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Using my co-op to stash his dope. And my grandson's doing what he's doing. He's swinging from the chandelier with six broads. And then someone upstairs, a neighbor, whatever, drops a dime, and they bring the canines, they find the stash. 6 kilos of cocaine. You couldn't send them out to buy 6 pounds of dog food the shape he was in 4 years ago.
Well, the feds had to know.
Of course they knew.
Maybe you should see a doctor.
You want me to roll over on Mike?
You got a good specialist?
Roll over on Mike or the kid takes the fall.
Maybe you should try a gluten-free enema, Dustin. What's the matter? The series was canceled. What's the difference? Dennis Freeman and Dusty Boy Hoffman and Lacajo Mole, better known as Luck on HBO, was canceled, which I believe is the first time an HBO series that was renewed for a season was canceled. Now, they're saying it's canceled because too many horses were dying. I don't believe it. It was canceled because it was the lowest viewership in the history of HBO. And that is because not the horses were dying, but because Dustin Hoffman was dead since Ratso Rizzo. This was the worst series I've ever seen in my life. People I respect in the media who understand art understood there was none in this series. They understand that Dustin Hoffman, as a waddling, small old man, just didn't pull it off as Ace the great criminal. I mean, would you believe a criminal is deadly who waddles through a room? He and Dennis Farina in the series lived in the same apartment and would fall asleep in different beds, chatting about their plan to take over a racetrack. I've never seen anything like this, but the reason I am mentioning it is not to celebrate the fact that HBO pulled Luck. It's to show you how inbred Hollywood is, to show you how psychotic they are with regard to the outside audience, to show you how arrogant these drug addicts are in Hollywood, and to just show you why you never hear or see a patriotic voice on HBO. If you have ever seen the HBO series Luck, I want to spend exactly 2 minutes on it. Many of you don't get HBO. Most of you don't. Do you agree with me it was the worst series in the history of television? And do you believe that they actually stopped it because too many horses were dying and it became too controversial, or because Dustin Hoffman was simply the worst actor in the history of HBO, not believable as a gangster? Topic number two is any topic you want to make it. Certainly, this is not earth-shattering. 1-800-449-8255. There was a state dinner last night where those who have invaded the White House used the White House as a backdrop, as a campaign stop to reelect the tyrant, the naked tyrant, Barack Obama. They bring the British prime minister to the U.S., and if you can believe this, those invited include the most vile creatures from Brooklyn who have made it big in Hollywood, such as Harvey Weinstein. That is right. The classy president and first lady have invited one of the worst people in the history of the world to the White House, Harvey Weinstein, who has the nerve saying that Obama is one of the greatest presidents in history and he's not been recognized for it yet. Now, I only wish that we could turn the television on and cancel this White House series called the Barack Obama Presidency. I just wish it was as easy as saying the ratings are too low. No matter how much PR they put out, no one's watching it. No one believes him as president. He's about as believable as president as Dustin Hoffman was as Ace the Gangster. Let's put it to you that way. And instead of horses dying on the series Luck, we got an America dying because of this gang that can shoot straight, can shoot straight, can shoot straight, very straight indeed. Indeed. It's a big story. You know, yesterday they disarmed the Marines in Afghanistan so that Peter Sellers Panetta could visit Camp Leatherneck. They wanted the Marines to look just like their Afghan partners. This is the first time in history that U.S. Marines were stripped of guns during an address by a Secretary of Defense. That is because this administration hates the Marines, fears the Marines, wants to decimate the Marines. As a matter of fact, a new story came out that should make you sick. It confirms everything I've been warning you about this gang that invaded the White House. The Marines are going to have 4 battalions and 12 air squadrons eliminated under Barack Obama. The Marine Corps said it would cut 4 infantry battalions and 12 flying squadrons over the next 5 years as 20,000 Marines are fired to meet communist budget constraints and to please Barack Obama's Chinese masters. The cuts are part of Panetta's efforts to please his communist masters and to reduce projected spending by $500 billion over the next decade, as called for in a budget agreement last autumn by Barack Hussein Obama. The plan will reduce the number of infantry battalions to 23 from 27 and so forth. It is a redesigned Marine Corps force structure because it's the last vestige of pure, unadulterated, gung-ho patriotism. And the fact of the matter is, this usurper in the White House fears them. You'd like to talk about luck? Phone number is 1-800-449-8255. Let's go to Jack in Las Vegas. Jack, you get HBO and you watched Luck and it was canceled. What do you think of it?
I really tried to give that show every benefit of the doubt. The guy, David Milch, he had done Deadwood before, and I thought that was an awesome show.
Right.
And about 4 shows into it, I just gave up. It was horrible.
It was a disaster. It looked like it was written by people on a cocktail of drugs. There was no continuity. No one could follow the dialogue. But the worst part of it really was Nick Nolte as the mumbling drunk horse owner. Was he believable to you?
But his voice is awful, and the guy is just over the hill, I think.
Well, how about Dustin Hoffman as a terrifying old gangster? Wasn't that a miscast?
Yeah, the whole show was, and you've got all these.
And Dennis Farina's living in an apartment with him, and they fall asleep in separate beds in pajamas.
It was ridiculous. It was
I know. I don't understand. But you see, the point is, these are the people. These drug addicts in Hollywood are the people who put Obama in the White House and who continue to front for him and PR for him and try to convince the American people he's the greatest president in American history, but no one's buying him. No one's buying the Obama presidency as a great presidency. And the same people in Hollywood who produced Luck produced the Obama White House. I've studied this. They're the ones who first raised the money for him. It was that guy Larry, that bald guy from that show. What's his name? Larry whatever. I forget his name. Larry David. Larry David is a super left-wing Brooklynite who hates America, in my opinion. He was the first one to raise money for Obama in his own living room with his psychotic ex-wife. I mean, this is what's going on in the country today. It's a country ruled by the Hollywood idiots. Do you know that they had a dinner last night at which Harvey Weinstein was one of the lead guests? How do you feel about the president having a night in the White House where Harvey Weinstein is invited to a state dinner? Does he belong there? I know there's nothing that you could say. The question is loaded. The question is top loaded. Is there anyone listening to this show who actually knows what I'm talking about? Do you have any idea what I mean? Because most people do not get HBO or who listen to this show. We are knuckle-dragging. Most people who listen to my show are knuckle-dragging throwback Christians who don't believe in Hollywood to begin with. So they don't get HBO. And so therefore, they don't even know what I'm talking about. The sophisticates in America like HBO, where you get throwback racists on a daily basis attacking the Tea Party, attacking Christians, attacking the church, attacking the family, attacking the nation itself. That's the fare of the Hollywood degenerates who run the sewer pipe throughout the world. So this, to me, is a celebration. The death of Luck by HBO is actually the beginning of the end of this rule of the crackheads in Hollywood. I believe that something's going to happen. I believe that the bankers who control them are going to start reining them in because they've been getting away with saying we're creative, we don't want to answer to the bankers, don't meddle with what we do, we're too creative, we know exactly what we're doing, Dustin Hoffman's a big name. Remember in the beginning, Dustin Hoffman came out and said, well, I've never done TV because I'm so great, you know, I'm just such a great actor. I'm deigning to do TV because David Milch is such a, and the other, and this is such a great series. He did it because he needed the money. He did it because he's unbookable in Hollywood. He's a washout. The guy hasn't done a good movie in 25 years.
I think, didn't he appear as a woman in a movie years ago, which was a big hit, which I didn't watch on principle? What was that movie? Tootsie? Tootsie Roll by Dustin Hoffman. That was a big hit. I understand that. I liked Dustin Hoffman as Ratso Rizzo. I thought that he channeled his inner self. The original Dustin Hoffman's role of Ratso Rizzo in Midnight Cowboy, like, I don't know, 300 years ago, that was the real inner Dustin Hoffman. Now, had he been able to channel that character, let's say that character, Ratso Rizzo, didn't die on the bus going to Miami, right? And he lived, and he worked his way up in gambling and in the gangs, and he wound up a big mocker in the gang land, right? That character, Ratso Rizzo, had he lived inside Dustin Hoffman, could have been the ace that he was looking for, the ace in the Tootsie role. But instead, he dug up like an Uncle Milty role. I have never seen anyone who waddles who projects fear. That's the main point. Now, this Nick Nolte used to be a first-rate actor. Everyone loved him. We know he had a problem with alcohol. That's not to be ridiculed. But they resurrect this guy and they put him in the series and he mumbles. You can't understand half of the sentence. And then they give him a stupid farmer's hat to walk around in. And I can go on and on. Do you know what the viewership was, the actual numbers? It was 500,000 viewers. They had 500,000 viewers per episode toward the end. Now, compare it to The Sopranos. I think the numbers were 10 or 11 million or higher, for example. I'll give you an example. Do you have the numbers, Beowulf? We're going to look them up. I'll be right back on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Mike starts using my co-op to stash his dope. And my grandson's doing what he's doing. He's swinging from the chandelier with six broads.
Maybe you should see a specialist. And look, if you got a pain in the side, you never know what it could be.
Diamond, they bring the canines, they find the stash.
You never know. Oh, look, you should go to a good specialist. You got one in L.A.
Pounds of dog food, the shape he was in 4 years ago.
No, I don't know. Maybe you should try a gluten-free enema. That could work also. It could be gas stains.
Roll over on Mike and his offshore boat. They roll over on Mike or the kid.
No, it's gas. It's not a heart attack. Don't be stupid.
After you take door number three, where you claim the dope and you do the time, question
I don't know. I got something on the side under the arm. It's hurting a little bit. Well, who knows? It could be that that's you're eating all that spaghetti every night, Dennis. What do you expect with that Italian food?
Stop it. Hypothetic, I'm saying.
Ah, stop it. Come on. You eat grapes. You'll be better off with yogurt than that scongeli you eat. You stuff yourself. What do you expect? Pains, what do you expect to have? No, every time I watch this show, the best scenes for me were Dustin Hoffman and Dennis Farina in a bedroom together, with Dustin Hoffman waddling into bed in a bathrobe, and Dennis Farina sitting in a chair across from him like, what in the heck were they thinking? And the reason I'm going on is twofold. One, because it's astonishing that the people are smart enough to have seen through the charade. Two, it shows you how out of touch the crackheads are who make these things in Hollywood. Three, their edifice is crumbling. The very people who created the liberal edifice in this nation are falling apart at the seams. They're imploding from within. That's really what I'm trying to tell you. Luck is out of luck, which I said from day one, which has been picked up by everyone in the media. Now let's jump to the White House. Here you have the most classless individual in American history invades the White House, invites a racist black comedian in there, who talks about it being black heaven, how they were doing some dance together at night with their shoes off in the East Room. It's nauseating. And now there's a picture of him with this guy, Cameron from England, sitting at a basketball court while our Marines are disarmed, while oil prices are going through the roof. The nation is more divided than ever, and he's eating a hot dog with Mr. Cameron there. By the way, Matt, how do you get these pictures, Matt Drudge? I don't get it. This guy is a national treasure. No, I shouldn't say it, but I do. The picture that Matt Drudge has up on the Drudge Report right now of Obama digesting a hot dog, his lips are sealed, so his cheeks are full, which means he already bit on the hot dog. But Cameron, they got him snapping just as he stuffs his face with the hot dog. It's something to see. This is the West. Now, if you were the Taliban and you were looking at a picture of two of the most powerful men on earth who rule England UK and the United States of America, would you be afraid of them? Would you be afraid of these two men if you took a look at them? I mean, this is not Winston Churchill having a brandy. No, my friends, it isn't. It's something quite different. So, Joe in New York, WR, I'm glad to hear somebody watches HBO other than me. Joe, what did you think about Luck?
My feeling is this. The directors in Hollywood are such sycophants to the, you know, fame and the reputation of some of these actors. They're afraid to actually stand up to them and say, look, the dialogue is idiosyncratic to begin with, but you're going to need to at least enunciate it well, and they're afraid to do their
job. You mean the Nick Nolte character who mumbled with the hat on?
I'm talking about all of them, because I watch the show wanting to enjoy it, because I do like some of those actors' work. And,
absolutely.
And it was just incoherent babble.
There was no continuity. I didn't know what they were talking about. I tried, because truthfully, I like a good drama. It relaxes me. I've said that. I love movies. Now, I watch this, and I can't understand from the beginning to the end what it's about. I have no idea. Do you have any idea what the plot was?
Well, no, it was just too esoteric. It was all, you know, it dealt with horses, I think, too mechanically.
By the way, they used the same sets over and over and over again to save money. And I think all the money was sucked down into the actors. I think the actors sucked all the money into their pockets. So they used the Santa Anita racetrack for almost every scene.
Yeah, it's kind of like watching Dr. Zhivago, where they use the same sets over and over. I just want to say one thing. I don't necessarily agree with your geopolitical view of the whole thing. I don't think the canceling of a show necessarily, you know, is a harbinger of the death knell of a particular, you know, way of thinking. But I understand.
Okay, but let me ask you something. Do you actually believe? Have you seen another HBO series ever canceled before?
No, but I think this one, they were trying to get by with very little content and just the reputations of these actors who, really, it shows you the true talent, I think.
Well, what did you think about Dennis Farina living in an apartment with Dustin Hoffman? Did they look to you as frightening gangsters?
Well, you know, I've run into a few being a nightclub entertainer and.
Oh, some of them are like that. So there are old men who waddle around in bathrobes who are dangerous. All right. Well, live and learn. I'll be right back to talk about more.
Lately, we've heard a lot of professional politicians, a lot of the folks who are, you know, running for a certain office, who shall go unnamed, they've been talking down new sources of energy. I guess they like gas guzzlers. They think that's good for our future. We're trying to move towards the future. They want to be stuck in the past. And we've heard this kind of thinking before. Let me tell you something. If some of these folks were around when Columbus set sail, they must have been founding members of the Flat Earth Society. They would not have believed...
This is interesting to listen to, because here is Barack Obama, who sees himself as a visionary, as a progressive visionary at that, as did Karl Marx and every other radical revolutionary. You must understand that even Hitler thought he was a visionary. Mussolini thought he was a visionary, thought he was improving Italy. Karl Marx thought he was improving Russia. So you see, this is what happens when a radical is put into the White House. Anyone who disagrees with him is stupid and a throwback and a member of the Flat Earth Society. It's as simple as that. They sneer at everybody else. So, I mean, I don't want to go too heavy into this because we know what we're dealing with here. Egomaniacal, whatever. And you want to call on the HBO series Luck, which was drawing only 500,000 viewers in its Sunday night time slot, which was a total disaster. HBO has close to 30 million subscribers. 30 million subscribers. But only 500,000 viewers were watching this disaster. Now, the biggest hit, I think, was The Sopranos. Everyone who watched it agrees. I mean, never met anyone who watched it didn't agree with that analysis. I don't really have the ratings here, but it was somewhere way up. Oh, here, 8.6 million, I think, was the numbers they were getting, season average. Yeah, season finale was 10.98 million in 2004. It's another question of why they never made a Sopranos movie. I'll never understand it. There's such bad movies coming out that was such a big hit. Why did they never make a Sopranos, you know, one movie, like an hour and a half, to sort of summarize the whole thing? I'll never understand that one. So, as I say, this show is a combination of news, views, and reviews, a term I coined when I was a local talk show host back in 94 through the year 2000. I used to do it every day. news, views, and reviews. I didn't get stuck on politics. I do like popular culture. And so it's fair game to talk about this. It really is. 1-800-449-8255. Why do you think Weinstein was invited to the White House, given his track record of producing basically violent pornography? Harvey Weinstein produces violent pornography, and it's softcore pornography. That's how he made his fortune. Harvey Weinstein is a pornographer. Ask anybody who really knows art. They will tell you Harvey Weinstein is a man who produces fundamentally softcore violent pornography. And he's invited to the White House. It's no different than Chris Rock being invited and then boasting about it being black heaven. This is the level that we are facing within America. We have people who have trashed America and trashed the White House. And I don't know how many different times I have to make the same comparison, where they took out banjo players in undershirts and they said no ties allowed inside, where they skateboarded through the White House. Well, then you'd have Jimmy Carter. So it's actually not an apt comparison. I think we already had that with Jimmy Carter, and I take that back. We almost didn't survive that invasion by the crowd from Georgia there, and which is not knocking Georgia as a state. They have very good fried chicken, incidentally. I remember going through there on a bus to Miami a number of decades ago. It wasn't a bad stop. That was actually the best chicken I ever ate in my life. But when you're young, you don't really know food. I remember going to Miami, how magical it was, now that I think about it. I was a kid. You know, I'm not going to go into the poor story, but really, we didn't have much. We didn't have a car, the kids I knew. And one Easter break, no, it was a winter break, one Christmas break, two or three, four of us got into a bus and went to Miami by bus. It was nonstop. And it stopped in Georgia, and at the bus stop, they had, like food. I swear to God, I figured, all right, I'm in Georgia. I got to try Southern fried chicken. What did I know from food? I loved it. Now, the rest of the trip, I had to put up with people throwing the chicken bones in the aisle of the bus. I think that was the last bus trip I ever took in my life. But I remember the following year, four of us piled into an old car, and we drove nonstop from New York to Miami. You know, the most exciting part of that was, well, you know, guys, when they're young, they don't care. They could sleep on the earth. It doesn't matter. It's wonderful to be young because you're not that picky. And, you know, there was no bathrooms and no rest stops, and you didn't wash. It didn't matter. They were your friends. There were three in the back, three in the front. We're driving to Miami, 36 hours nonstop. I'll never forget, as long as I live, as a kid who had never been in the tropics, when our car arrived within 100 miles of Miami and we started to pick up stations out of Havana, because I was a big listener to Cuban music in those days. I used to love the Latin music, the salsa music, if it was what they call it today, but it's not salsa. It was never salsa music coming out of Cuba. It was quite a different story. When we first heard bands like Orquesta Aragon coming out of Cuba on a car radio, it was as though we had gone to another universe. Now, when that car went down Collins Avenue in Miami, and I put my head out the window, and I felt the air, the floral air, and smelled the flowers, truly it was paradisical. Today, I can't stand Florida. I don't like the heat. I don't like the humidity. There's no Chinese food. There's no Thai food. The Italian food isn't any good. That's the main reason I don't like it. Now, it could be that I haven't found the good places yet, but I mean, I know they exist. But the truth of the matter is, I left my heart in San Francisco, where I'm broadcasting from on a daily basis. I never want to leave here again. It's as simple as that. Like right now, you got a heat wave on the East Coast, I understand. On the West Coast, we got rainstorms. We got 9 days of rain. You're going to get the storms in a few days, obviously. They run west to east. We got this Arctic storm coming in out of the north, which is gorgeous, glorious. I love the rain. Knocks down the pollen. The earth was sitting there with its mouth open saying, please give me a drink of water. Every leaf on my hillside property is smiling right now saying, thank you, God. So to me, rain is beautiful. But the fact of the matter is, I happen to love the Bay Area. Other than the political structure here is the most corrupt in the United States of America. I mean, you hear stories that New Orleans is a corrupt city. That's because you don't know San Francisco. San Francisco is the most corrupt city in the world. It could be more corrupt than any city in the world, so far as I can understand. We have a sheriff who pled guilty to a battery charge because he was about to go to trial where he might have been put away because of spousal abuse charges, The guy knew he couldn't win in a jury trial. They were threatening to take it out of San Francisco, which he controls with his liberal buddies in the newspaper business. They were liable to move it to Northern California, where the people still know what's right and wrong and up and down and left and right, northeast, west, and south, where he probably would have had the book thrown at him. So the guy does a plea bargain. But wait, listen to this. The sheriff of San Francisco, after pleading guilty to this crime, cannot carry a gun, but he's still sheriff. They won't fire him. And the local newspaper writes an editorial saying, let him keep his job. It's only 3 more years. Now, if this is not an example of people without any sense of dignity or pride and without any sense of propriety of what's right or wrong, I'd like to know what is, okay? But I live here. I live here because, as I said to you, this is where I live. This is where I live. I don't care what they do. I wish that they were more dignified. I wish they were less corrupt. I wish they liked families more. But they don't. They hate America. They hate families. They hate the church. They hate the police. They hate the military. That doesn't mean I do. They're entitled to be anti-American louts. That's what's great about this nation. But I live here, and they're not driving me out of here. The only time I'll ever leave here is when Jerry Brown raises the state taxes to an extent that it becomes worse than it is in third world countries. That is right. Jerry Brown became governor, and true to form, Jerry Brown, although he tricked me into believing he was a centrist, is now seeking, he just did a deal with unions over the last few days, where the unions who control this state and put him in power have agreed to drop increasing the sales tax, and instead they're going to let him run wild over the most productive class of citizens in the state of California by raising the state income tax. Now, I got to tell you, if you're making any money in the state, you're paying over 10% state income tax. That's on top of killing federal taxes. You're paying 11% state income tax. Jerry Brown wants to raise it to 15% state income tax. Why is that? Because they actually want the productive class to leave. Demagogues like Jerry Brown want the illegitimate, illegal alien who don't even speak English, because then they can get away with virtual murder. Don't you understand how this works? Why do you think the white liberal panders to non-citizens? Because the non-citizen doesn't even read or write the language to a large part. They're illiterate in English. Therefore, the white liberal who is raping the treasury can get away with murder if they get rid of all the people who actually know what they're doing. So they want to drive you out of the state. That's one man's opinion. Now let's go back to a fantasy and talk about luck. The show that ran out of luck. BJ in New York on WOR. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, luck was a crooked racetrack, kind of like the U.S. is now. So it doesn't surprise me it got canceled.
What do you mean? Where everything was rigged, but the horses were dying because they were pushing them too hard. That is true. I mean, in fact, I remember when they had to euthanize a horse on a track in one of the storylines. I thought that was horrendous. I didn't like watching it personally. But it turns out they actually were killing horses.
It was terrible that found. But you know what struck me? If you're going to, first of all, to make a TV show about racetrack people,
yeah,
you know, that's a cult. They speak in code, number one. So that's okay. Really hard to understand. But then okay. To like mumble the lines, they're phoning it in. You know?
Yes, I hear what you're saying. They didn't even attempt to translate the mumbled lines to the average listener. I mean, I was never fascinated by the racetrack life. I used to go when I was a kid. I went for about a year when it was, 18, 17 years old. I don't remember how old I was. For about a year, I thought it was fun. But then after that, what is in it? Nothing. I don't see anything in that world. To each his own. I was never a gambler. Are you a gambler, Bob?
No, I don't. I don't place it bad. I don't have a proclivity for it, but, you know, like, I don't understand.
It's a disease. I mean, gambling is an illness. That's what I understand. It's like a drug addict. They can't stop. And I went through the phase of gambling when I was 11, as I've said not so jokingly on this show. And I've actually studied the disease of gambling at one point. I found out that most people have a gambling bug at around just about pre-puberty or puberty, and it's tied in with sexuality, and most people get through it, according to a psychological analysis that I've read.
Well,
it's a little esoteric. I mean, most gamblers wouldn't accept that, but that's what I saw. I want to talk about something else. Wait, what's the movie? There's another show, I don't know if it's Showtime or HBO, that I have to recommend, and I think we had him on the show. It's about, it's called Casino Jack. Casino Jack was about Jack Abramoff, the lobbyist during the Republican era, who was found guilty and went to jail and did his time. I had him on the show about a month ago. Now, what's interesting about this Jack Abramoff character, as played by the actor who I forget, he's a fabulous actor, incidentally. It's all liberal. It smears all Republicans. It smears Bush. It smears Newt Gingrich. It smears Tom DeLay. It makes it look like only the Democrats are clean and good. I mean, all right, you can see right through that. And the honest FBI agent is a dead ringer for guess who? When the girl is finally going to give up what her husband was doing to robbing the Indians, take a guess. She goes to the FBI. Take a guess who the agent is. Hi, miss. I'm miss Mr. Gilbert. There's Obama standing there. The only honest man in the entire series is a twin for Barack Obama. So the whole thing was created to make Republicans look bad and to make Democrats look as clean as the driven snow. All I got to do is answer that with two words. Barney Frank. Freddie Mae, Fannie Mac. That's all we have to say to end that fantasy. Nevertheless, I got to talk about it for a minute. So the Spacey, Kevin Spacey, fabulous actor, don't care what his politics are. He plays Jack Abramoff, does a fabulous job. It's fantasy. But wait, I'm getting to a point. In this series, in this show, this movie rather, this I think made-for-TV movie, and I believe it's HBO, Kevin Spacey plays Jack Abramoff. There's a scene where they're trying to take over a Greek guy who owns a bunch of gambling boats in Miami, right? First of all, the guy who plays the Greek gambling magnate is incredible as an actor. That's number one. But they hire a guy at one point to kill this guy, this Greek guy. There's a whole sequence leading up to it. And he's an Italian, and the scene is shot allegedly like in a restaurant in New York. They go to see him, and they talk to him about going down there and straightening out this Greek guy who's being an SOB. That scene in the restaurant, of this old Italian gangster who's slurping on spaghetti and talking to the guy who's hiring him to go down there and beat up the Greek with his monster bodyguard sitting back in the shadows, is absolutely one of the finest scenes ever created in the history of gangster drama. In fact, I can't stop talking about it. I've watched this show three times. He is my favorite character. I don't know who he is. I'm getting enthusiastic about something you never saw. He's a fat old Italian guy, at least he's supposed to be Italian, and he's just slurping spaghetti and listening to the guy tell him the story. And he says to the guy who's trying to hire him, give me your finger, give me your hand, give me your hand. He's, I used to have an uncle, he was half Jewish, half Italian. Let me rub your hand, let me rub your hand. And he says, he would rub my hand and rub my hand and rub my hand, kitzler, kitzler, kitzler. And bang, he hits the guy's hand and the guy jumps back. He says, what'd you do that for? He says, well, he would both relax me and scare me at the same time. Now, that was one of the finest scenes written, acted, directed, and lit I've ever seen in the history of drama. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. Here, we got the name of that actor I just was talking about. Maury Chaykin played Big Tony in Casino Jack. Died July 2010. Much younger than me. That's horrible. Date of birth, July 1949, Brooklyn, New York. Date of death, 27 July 2010, Toronto, Canada. Kidney trouble. Maury Chaykin, height 6'1", blah, blah, blah. I'm a Canadian-American character. Maury Chaykin was born in Brooklyn, son of Professor Irving Chaykin, his wife Claire. Blah, blah, blah. Anyway, it's an interesting story onto that. I don't know about you. I read, see, like, guy died right away. I do the math instantly. I think, like, how old was the guy? Then you ask, what did he die from? You ask yourself these, what did he die? Oh, well, then the first thing you say is, well, he probably was a cocaine addict. Then you find out, no. Those are the horrible stories I got when I inquire, like, through a, you hear someone's father died or whatever. So, well, how old was he? He was, like, 61. Oh, really? What did he die from? He died of a heart attack. Oh, and he smoked? No, never smoked. In fact, he was a long-distance runner since he was in college. Well, I mean, he must have used drugs. No. He was a health food guy. In fact, did he take vitamins? Now you're reaching already. Oh, yeah, he lived on mega vitamins. Took C, took the E. So then you're, like, left in a lurch. There's only one answer to that one, which is go out that night and have a double. You know what I'm saying? At a certain point, I don't know, does anyone else do that? Is that warped? Is that kind of very warped of me to do that? I don't think I could be the only one who does it. So here I am doing talk radio later on in my life. I started out as a the stars in my eyes, you know, botanist, saving the world, saving the rainforest, famous nutritionist and herbalist. I mean, I would rather talk about the neurochemistry of drug abuse than talk about Barack Obama, to be frank with you. I would find more interest in the hypothetical illustration of the interaction between opponent and proponent processes in drug craving and relapse than talk about Newt Gingrich's gut. If you gave me the option, I would rather talk about 5-HODMT, bufotenine, which is the main indole found in the seeds of a certain plant that's toxic. I'd rather talk about that than Ron Paul. I would rather talk about psilocybin, which are found in magic mushrooms, than talk about Ron Paul, although there may be a relationship there that I'm not aware of. Come on. I couldn't resist that. I remember when mushrooms were big. Does anyone still use that stuff? You want a shroom? What schmucks? They were using such heavy-duty psychoactive drugs. No wonder that they have wrecked Hollywood and the universities. 1-800-449-825. And now I'm going to get someone talking to me about magic mushrooms and how they're really good for you. And it's a sacred rite of the Navajo and how I insulted Native Americans. I know that's coming next. Well, what would you like to talk about? I'm in a weird mood. It's like raining outside. I'm relaxed. Rain calms me down. Rain is like Valium falling from the sky. When you go out, you sit on a porch and there's like a light mist and a rain. It's like calming. You feel like you're bathing in liquid Valium, for me anyway. So here we are. Oh, Delaware. I only have 20 seconds. I'm out of time already. We were talking about the HBO flop called Luck and what Dustin Hoffman is liable to do now. I don't know where he's going to go from this loss. Maybe him and Dennis Farina can get a trailer together and put it as a side-by-side next to Janet Reno and her friend. And that might be the perfect solution. Who knows?
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Want to buy it. Most of them are old and dignified. Social register types, you know what I mean? They can't be trotting down to Times Square to pick out the merchandise. They gotta have some kind of middleman. And that's where old Daniel comes in, you know what I mean?
Hey, I'm walking here! I'm walking here! Get out of here!
That was Dustin Hoffman when he was still living, and we've been joking about the fact that he deigned to appear in an HBO series called Luck, which has bombed. They say because horses were dying. I say it's because he bombed, not because the horses. But I'm doing this because watching the Republican campaign has putting me through a state of withdrawal. You know, I'm trying to keep my professional qualifications a little sharper than I have in a while. So I'm reading my literature again, my medical literature, my biomedical literature, and I'm looking over the medical complications of drug abuse, and I realize the symptoms of withdrawal from certain drugs are almost exactly the same symptoms that I'm experiencing as I watch the Romney, Gingrich, Santorum, Ron Paul campaign going on forever. The first symptom of withdrawal of a sedative hypnotic drug intoxication and withdrawal syndrome, if I remember correctly, is anxiety, which they have given me in bundles. After anxiety comes insomnia, where you can't sleep at night thinking about the campaign that Romney is running. Then comes irritability. I think you would agree with me that I've exhibited irritability. Then after that, you see agitation. I think you would agree with me that agitation is present in some of my shows.
The next symptom that follows in the withdrawal sequence is anorexia, which I have not at all entered. In fact, the opposite is true. I've been eating more than ever. I've gained about 10 pounds since Romney started to play the middle. After anorexia, you see tremor and then seizures. Luckily, I will not probably go to the anorexia, tremor, seizures phases, because instead of losing weight, I tend to gain weight when I get anxious. Welcome to the Savage Nation. Speaking of food, we are reporting right now that Obama's a liar on every level, including the food level. While his wife tries to fake you into believing she actually eats vegetables and fruits, Obama is roaming all over the culinary map this week, according to an AP report. Hot dogs, bison, Wellington, baby back ribs. In fact, the president made a lunchtime detour today to a barbecue and ribs joint in order to show you how honest he is, even with regard to food. There's not a scintilla of reality in what this man does anymore. There's a scintilla of reality in anything that you see on dramas on television, okay? So that brings us to the show itself. Would you like to talk about diazepams as a category of drug, which seems to be the drug of choice of most Democrats out there? Or would you talk about with me the manifestations of solvent intoxication and abuse, meaning if you're sniffing gasoline or glue, which seems to me a majority of the Democrats in Congress are, because the symptoms of solvent intoxication, if I remember correctly, are euphoria, and most of them live in that first phase. Then disinhibition, that's number two, followed by dizziness, slurred speech, lack of coordination, sneezing, and coughing. That pretty much summarizes what you see going on in the Congress now, especially on the Democrat side. If you move from those phases of solvent intoxication and abuse, you get to the moderate symptoms, which include lethargy, stupor, hallucinations, nausea, diarrhea, ataxia, tremors, etc. Eventually, it becomes coma and seizures, which fortunately we haven't seen yet on the Democrat floor of the House. Let's take the callers. Let's go to Delaware. Andrew, I understand you are a horse trainer, and you have a comment to make about the failed, canceled HBO series called Bad Luck. Andrew, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Michael. I do train horses for a living, and like the previous caller said, I understand the racetrack code that that people talk with.
Yes.
And I couldn't follow this thing for anything. It was absolutely horrible. I mean,
So even the jargon of the racetrack was falsely portrayed in the series Luck.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, the only thing they came close to catching reality, in my opinion, were the degenerate gamblers that they were showing around the racetrack, because they run all over the spectrum there.
You mean those four guys, or that young guy who couldn't stop gambling, that one?
Yeah, you could always find types like that at the racetrack, but Dustin Hoffman, completely unbelievable. Dennis Farina might have been able to pull it off as a gangster.
Yeah, because Dennis Farina's heyday did play an affable tough guy, for sure. Okay, so you could say, all right, so he's an old affable tough guy. You could possibly believe it if they put him in a scene where he either beat someone up or shot him. Maybe it would be more believable. But Hoffman as the lead gangster was absurd.
It was painful to watch. I tried.
No, come on, you're in a racetrack business, and you've seen some pretty bad people show up. Has a gangster who waddles ever shown up? Someone who waddles who's 5'2"?
No.
Look. Maybe in Macau that would play well. I don't know, where they cut the screen off at the chest. But
have a certain look about them, and Dustin Hoffman doesn't even come close. And
it was painful to watch him. I don't know why he's still performing, to be honest with you. Well, look, I have a very diverse audience, from horse trainers to you name it. They all listen to the show, and I'm really glad to hear that you listen. I'm sending you a copy of Trickle Down Tyranny, the show to the horse trainers and the degenerate gamblers in your circle over there in Sorry. No, look, who knows? Maybe I can still save this country with that one book. You know, a single book has been known to alter things in nations in the past. I can name five such books. And every author dreams that his book or her book will be the book that changes the course of history. There are some books that have, for the better and for the worse. And I don't have to name them for you. Probably can name them yourself. But I believe Trickle Down Tyranny is the book that could change the course of human events. And it all depends upon whether you are willing to read the thing and show it to a friend. It's as simple as that. I'm not going to write another nonfiction book. I'm not going to say 100% because that would be a position I could never climb down from. I am a writer by profession before I was a broadcaster. I mean, I spent 30 years alone in rooms writing. And so, therefore, it's hard for a man to say what he will or won't do in the future. But, you know, after this book, I have coming out next winter a Christmas book called Train Tracks. I've told you that. That's going to be an amazing book of my early writings, which I've been digging out of my archives with a little overview. And then, of course, the following spring, which is about a year from now, I have the sequel to Abuse of Power, the next Jack Hatfield adventure. So I'm going to move more in that realm than I am going to move into the nonfiction, because if Obama wins again, there's going to be no need for any more nonfiction books. In fact, I have a theory that maybe it's a little paranoid, and I'll admit it, because I so distrust this fraud and the people around them. Look, you know, you got a guy who calls the show just now, a racetrack guy. That's as real as it gets. Maybe a surgeon knows reality on a level of reality we could never understand. They see people in ways we never see people, right? A surgeon, an oncologist, a psychiatrist. They see people in ways the rest of us don't see them. So they don't have any chance to have a rose-colored view of reality. I like to believe that I see things as they are. And now, admittedly, I'm a fantasist to a certain extent. I have a great imagination that works for me and against me. However, I can see people as they are, and I'm telling you, this man is an imposter. From my point of view, as flawed as our presidents always are because they're human beings, this man is a pure, unadulterated imposter. Everything that this man does is a fake from top to bottom. He talks about eating clean and vegetable, and he eats hot dogs and bison. The whole thing is a fake. It's a fake from top to bottom. So we know that. And what I fear coming is that if this man should bamboozle America, or if the Democrats are able to outmaneuver the Republicans by stealing the election, either using ACORN or the illegal aliens or triple voting, that kind of thing, or the Republicans continue to run to the center and they're going to lose the base, and God forbid this guy wins again, I don't think there are going to be many publishers who will ever publish a conservative author on a nonfiction basis ever again. I don't believe it'll ever happen, no matter how profitable it may be. Because I'll give you an example without naming names. Most New York publishing houses are owned by foreign firms today, right? Now, do you think a German holding company is going to want any controversy with a petty dictator like Barack Obama if he wins a second term? No. I'll go to the next step. We read today, shockingly, that the Washington Post has done a joint deal with China to put out a puff piece about China in their newspaper, the Washington Post. They're going to publish fake stories about the wonders of China's human rights record, etc., in a section in the Washington Post every day. Now, I can jokingly do a Mark Twain and say to you, I'm surprised it took this long for the owners of the Washington Post to show their true colors, which are red and pink. But it's not a joke. When you are seeing unadulterated ownership of American newspapers by the communist Chinese and how the Saudis have taken over Fox News, you could see that's why they downplay the threat of Sharia law. That's why they're all downplaying the threat of the Muslim terrorists around the world. You could see what happened with Fox News once the Saudis gained their 18% ownership and started control editorial control over them, which is why I am banned from Fox News. Make no mistake about it. I am banned from the UK and I'm banned from Fox News, and I'm very proud of it, incidentally. You know, it's come to me finally to understand that I'm proud of the fact I tried to warn the Brits against to protect themselves from themselves, and they didn't believe me. But take a look at what's happened to England since they banned me. It got much worse. It didn't get much better. In fact, there is there's one story after another. I don't want to throw it out here in 2 seconds and do a short shrift on it. The main point I'm trying to make is that if Obama, by some fluke or through the lack of intelligence on the part of the guys who run the Republican Party, if this man should be president again, my feeling is when I say to you I'm not going to write another nonfiction book, there's a couple of reasons for it. One, because I don't want to, but two, because they won't be published. There will be no room for conservative nonfiction if this man should win again. You can see what's happening in television. It's going to happen in publishing. I'll be right back. Savage.
Chris Comerford. I am the White House executive chef. And like what Mrs. Obama said earlier, I am the first woman executive chef. And it's a really great ceiling that was broken. That was in 2005. And today I will be responsible for the state dinner. And like you ladies, I cannot wait until we serve that lemon pudding because that will
be served.
Let's
stop right here. I want you to listen to a nauseating speech by the White House chef who had to talk about breaking a glass ceiling. But it gets even more nauseating and cheap as it goes on. Listen.
The first course is a halibut that came from Alaska, and it will be served with a braised kale that we just picked yesterday, and we had, like, chefs out there that were digging the ground and pretty much, like, working diligently and very hard to make sure that we what we have tonight will be fresh and just it just came from the farm.
Isn't that wonderful? Isn't that touching? How PC can you get? Now let's listen to the next course.
And for our main course, what is like a great marriage of the two countries? We have like the bison Wellington. Wellington is, of course,
Wellington?
A
bison Wellington?
Fair, and we're giving it an American
I can't take this. I feel as though I'm living in a Chinese propaganda movie where everything has been altered. The eye that alters, alters all. This is what Obama has introduced to the United States of America. By the way, what is that accent? Can someone tell me what Executive Chef Chris Comerford's accent is? Because something tells me that I don't know. I can't quite place it. Is it German? It wouldn't matter to me. I'm just curious. I like to be able to pick it out. Now let's go to Rod Blagojevich. Remember him as he leaves his house to begin serving a 14-year federal prison sentence. Do you know why he was given a 14-year sentence? Because he tried to sell Barack Obama's Senate seat. Unfortunately, he failed. Let's listen to clip 13.
There he is.
What did you say to your daughters? Tell me quickly.
What did you say to yours this morning? Let me say this here, real quick.
Governor.
Okay, I'm going to say a couple of quick things. First, saying goodbye is the hardest thing I've ever had to do. Heavy heart, clear conscience, but I have high, high hopes for the future. And one among the hopes is now you guys can go home. And our neighbors can get their neighborhood back. I'll see you guys when I see you.
You'll see you guys in 14 years. This guy's out of touch with reality. He's going away for 14 years in a federal prison, and he thinks it's a campaign stop. I mean, I think politicians are deluded to begin with, but I didn't know that they're this crazy. He says he has hope for the future with a 14-year sentence. I never heard anything like this. It gets crazier by the minute. Now, look, the guy was found guilty of trying to sell Barack Obama's Senate seat. As I say, unfortunately, he failed because the rest would be history had he succeeded. But nevertheless, they caught him, and that's the rest of that. So last night, David Cameron, I don't know if you know who he is, he's the hot dog eater from England, comes over, and in the midst of the worst disaster in the history of American foreign policy, which is the Arab world is in flames, David Cameron goes to watch basketball with Barack Obama in the swing state of Ohio. He's used as a prop for Barack Obama. They then go somewhere and he gives a speech, which has been called the worst speech ever given by a British prime minister in history. Cringeworthy was Cameron's toast to Obama at last night's state dinner. And they have the video of it up on the picture from the Mail Online, which I just put on my website. They attack Richard Nixon. And then he makes sentences such as, Cameron says Obama has pressed the reset button on the moral authority of the entire free world. Can anyone understand what this means? He's pressed the reset button on the moral authority of the entire free world. How? By unleashing Islamists across the Middle East who want to wipe Israel off the map? He's using drones to kill people rather than to bring them in, bring terrorists in and capture and kill them? He's used executive orders to keep Guantanamo Bay open, even though he said he would close it when he was running for office. It got even worse. The dismissiveness of Obama, the arrogance of Obama was never mentioned by David Cameron. It's really quite depressing, incidentally. When you realize that Obama's first act was to send back Winston Churchill's bust, you realize we've had a communist revolutionary take over this country.
Savage.
Next to God, faith, and country, nothing is more important than influence.
The Wall Street Journal's coming out with a piece called The Super Lobbyist. Do you know what that is? That's me. I'm the Super Lobbyist.
I'm legally allowed to accept money from special interests in order to influence Congress on their behalf.
You want $30 million in fees?
You want to kick some ass on the Hill? We can do it.
Show me the money!
That is a trailer from the TV movie. I think it was HBO, Casino Jack, which allegedly is based on the life of Jack Abramoff, played by Kevin Spacey. I told you the whole thing was set up to make Republicans look evil and Democrats look clean. But it was very entertaining and very well done because Kevin Spacey is a fabulous actor. And it was well done. It was understandable. If you know, you could read through what they were trying to say, you can watch it. So anyway, Jack Abramoff was a top lobbyist when Bush was president. And he committed some violations of the law for which he paid and went to prison. I've been thinking about Jack Abramoff over the last few days. He was on the show about a month ago, and I've been thinking about him for a number of reasons. What I'm going to ask him, and he's joining us right now on the Savage Nation. Well, let me ask him directly. Jack Abramoff, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thanks for having me.
Jack, you were there. You knew everybody. You knew Newt Gingrich. You knew President Bush. I mean, you were the top lobbyist around. You were making a fortune. I watch what's going on now under Obama. What they're doing, is it any different?
No, I think it's, in many cases, it's worse. You know, I was on a show, they asked me about the Solyndra thing, and I said, to be honest with you, at my most cheeky moment, I wouldn't have even proposed something like that. They're far exceeding, I think, what went on in those days.
$500 million with Solyndra is only one of the corrupt stories coming out of the fake solar companies. We know that this is a churn. This is the way they churn money into the hands of supporters. Isn't it, Jack?
Absolutely. That's exactly what they're doing. They're recycling money back to their friends who are giving it back to them.
So these $500 million loans from the federal government under Obama are basically, in a way, it's just graft and corruption in plain English. Do you think
There's
anybody
no
involved
about
in this... Do you, right, Jack. So that's what I'm saying. You went away for how many years?
3.5 years, a little more than 3.5 years.
And they were not easy. I mean, but what I read in your book, this was not an easy time. I mean, they went after you in prison, didn't they?
Yeah, it was horrible. Every minute in prison was terrible.
But people like to believe, oh, you went to a white-collar prison and it's a university and it's easy. By what I read in your book, they harassed you to death in that prison.
Yeah, you know, there really aren't any white-collar prisons left. 90% of the people in prison are there for drug offenses, and they're inner-city drug dealers, and, you know, they're not exactly white-collar criminals.
So, Jack, what message do you have for the listeners to the Savage Nation? You wrote a book called Capital Punishment, which is your story, and I highly recommend it. But watching what Obama is getting away with, what hope do we have that any of these crooks will be caught and punished?
Well, there's very little hope because it's unlikely that the upper echelon of his Justice Department will focus on it in the way that Bush and his Justice Department focused on at least the Republicans who were involved in some of this activity. And the problem, I think, ultimately is that year in, year out, somebody's going to be doing this stuff. We need to change these rules in the Congress and in the laws that they abide by so that it is all illegal. The bigger problem isn't what they're doing that's illegal. What's the problem is that what they're doing is legal, and that's the greatest crisis here.
Jack, you just said that the Bush administration Justice Department went after you, while the Holder Justice Department won't go after any of the Democrat crooks who are violating the law. Why is that? What, are they less honest than the Bush guys?
Well, they're running the Democratic playbook. During the Clinton administration, I was personally involved with a criminal referral that came down from the House of Representatives about the Interior Department, where they were wantonly breaking the law. It was sent over to Janet Reno, and she put it in a shredder. They didn't do a thing about it. So they're running.
Who was the AG under Bush who went after you?
Well, the criminal division went after me. It was under, I guess, started under Ashcroft. But, you know, look, I broke the law. I don't want to make this.
No, I know you did, and you admit it. And you said that you got arrogant, and you got egotistical, arrogant, and you got blind, and you made a lot of mistakes. You admit it. But by what I'm seeing, Jack, they're doing a lot worse right now than what you did.
Well, they are certainly doing things that are repugnant, and the American people are upset about it. The question is whether the Republicans, to be honest with you, are going to be able to convince people that they're any different. Because at the end of the day, all of these politicians are engaged in this. This isn't just Democrats, although, to be honest with you, they're better at it than the Republicans. But it's not just them. And we've got to get some real changes here, or frankly, this country is going to continue to spend our money until we're broke. We are broke. I guess it's too late.
Yeah, I don't want to, you know, make this a bad scene for you, like with the Indians and what you ripped them off. But, I mean, you admit that you did that, and you got carried away. But I see things going on a much higher level than the alleged $30 million that you took with your partners. That there was restitution made, wasn't there?
Well, we're paying restitution. I mean, my situation got complicated by the media. At the end of the day, what I did wrong vis-a-vis my clients was I didn't inform them about some of the profit that I was sharing in. But my clients ultimately, I feel, didn't really get ripped off in terms of the value. They got ripped off in terms of what I informed them of. But it's complicated. What's going on now, though, in terms of what we're seeing, is a little different. What's going on now is, in essence, the rape of the government. Okay, not necessarily clients who are suffering, but all of us are suffering because these guys are going after the booty that's out there and in the money.
I understand. So, Jack Abramoff, did Kevin Spacey do a good job or a fairly good job in portraying your story?
You know, I really love him as an actor. I think he's fantastic, and he's
so
a good guy. He came and visited me in prison, but I got to tell you, the movie was a little off, let's just say.
It was. I mean, like, I don't want to get personal. Was your wife not portrayed accurately, or what did he do? What was the worst part of it?
Well, I mean, it was really a lot of it. Most of it was inaccurate. My wife was certainly portrayed inaccurately. My wife, whose mother died of lung cancer, is one of the biggest anti-smoking people you could ever meet in terms of personal behavior, and he has her smoking in the movie. So
it's just emblematic. I remember that scene where you say to her, the character, rather, Spacey says to her after he's been caught, "When did you take up smoking?" And she says, I did so tonight. I thought it was laughable. Look, the whole thing was made that Republicans were evil and bad and corrupt, and the Democrats were all good. In fact, the most laughable part of Casino Jack was when the girlfriend of your ex-partner goes and rats him out because he was cheating on her. And guess who the savior is inside the FBI? A dead ringer for Obama. Remember that one?
Yes, I do. That was astonishing. Yeah.
Now that leads us to the next area, and it's another reason I wanted to have you back on the Savage Nation, Jack. You have been a movie producer, and the last you were on, we talked. Are you back in the film business?
I am. I'm setting up movie projects, as you know, takes a while. I'm in the midst of doing it. These are not necessarily films like Casino Jack. They're not political films. But I am back doing that. That's one of the things I'm trying to get going.
I've had people ask me to do a Savage docudrama, meaning a story of my life with me playing me and a lot of archival photos, just as a straight-out documentary. They told me with 10 million listeners alone, you know, at 10 bucks a head, it's $100 million gross. Do you agree with them?
I have to tell you, I do. I think it would be a fascinating story, and you've got to get the right documentarian to do it. But I have to tell you, I think it would be amazing.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Without just indulging myself, it is one of the topics I wanted to talk about. I have a friend who's done some big, big movies. He's very conservative, so I won't mention his name because otherwise he will never do another movie again. But he told me that just through the independent theaters, the independent theaters that are not controlled by the chains, he said there are something like 800 of them, or I don't know how many he said there are. He said you can start by distributing an independent film through the independent theaters that will star for product. Is that accurate in your opinion?
Yeah, I think so. Again, everything's going to come down to what kind of film it is. Is it a good film, well made? Certainly the story is fantastic, but you can mess up a fantastic story. You've got to get the right artist to come in there and do the right kind of thing. And I think you could have an incredible hit if you did it right.
Why don't we do it together? You want to do it with me?
I would be honored to do it with you. Absolutely.
All right. I think Jack Abramoff might produce the Michael Savage story. No, I mean, Ray, I like you, Jack. I like how you have the guts to have, you know, let's face it, you paid the price, man. You went to jail. I don't know how many people would come out and still have the guts to go on altogether without being broken from the experience. And, you know, here you are. You're still functioning. You're back there. And moreover that, Jack, you didn't say you're innocent. You still don't say you're innocent. You admit you made mistakes and you were guilty, right?
Exactly. I did. sadly. I wish I could say otherwise, but I can't.
Now, you know, what's interesting to me on top of it all is that you played football as a student at Beverly Hills High School. You were a football player?
Yes, I was, right.
You grew up in Beverly Hills. That was where you grew up as a kid?
I did. I grew up in Beverly Hills. I actually recently, for the first time in 30 years, saw my old high school football coach for dinner, and he had a few things to say to me. I can tell you.
Do you still live in the area? Can you tell us that on the show?
I live outside of Washington D.C. still. Yeah, since 1981.
No, because I go down to Beverly Hills on a fairly regular basis, and I'm one of the few people from San Francisco who actually likes L.A. I find it a dynamic, exciting, younger city than this old, sad, beatnik city that I live in. I mean, I love the environment up here. It's just a very depressing environment, San Francisco, in so many ways. The people look beaten up, and they're very, very politically skewed in only one direction. There's no diversity here of thought at all. Anyway, Jack, yeah, are there any other ideas you'd like to leave my audience with here on the Savage Nation?
Yeah, basically that America's got to pay attention to the corruption in Washington and what is going on, the very things you raise every night. People have got to pay attention, and a movement is afoot, and I'm involved with it, to do something about this, legislatively and politically. And I think we're going to see more about it, and I'll keep you informed, of course, in the next few months. We've got to do something, otherwise we're going to go over that cliff and never come back.
Well, you know, I believe that. That's why I wrote Trickle Down Tyranny, which I'm going to send a copy to you, by the way. I think you'll serve all people understand what I'm saying. How does Obama get away with these things? Is it because he owns the press? The press is compliant? What is it? What is this? There's absolutely no criticism of this man.
Well, they're not merely compliant. I think what they're doing is they remember well what happened between Bill Clinton's election in 1992 and 1994. They criticized Bill Clinton. They criticized what he was doing. They played the usual iconoclast, and they lost the Congress. I think they made a conscious decision at that point that will never happen to them again. They guard Obama. They will protect his flank. And anybody who thinks otherwise just has to turn the television on, and they'll see differently.
Jack Abramoff, thank you very much for taking the time to be with us on the Savage Nation. I'm going to get your email address. We're going to talk, and maybe we'll do the Michael Savage story.
That'd be wonderful. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. I'll be right back. It's the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Welcome to the Savage Nation. I was reading in the Wall Street Journal that Hemorrhoid is closing in on the $100 million mark in his television venture. And good luck to him, by the way. Doubling the revenues of his company from $40 million to $80 million, according to the Wall Street Journal. And it's the amount that Hemorrhoid's channel charges, $9.95 a month for a two-hour daily broadcast. Is $9.95 a month, and more than 300,000 subscribers have already signed up to Hemorrhoid's channel, which is astounding. I cannot believe it. That's fabulous. That's good news for all of us. And it says Hemorrhoid's subscriber total tripled, going from 80,000 to 230,000 last June to September after he was kicked off Fox News Network, which is their loss and his gain, incidentally. That's pretty amazing that the guy's going to make $80 million this year. I mean, I wish him luck. He's got a lot of guts for an uneducated dolt who's a faker from top to bottom. I really think that he's done very, very well for himself. And it just shows you that H.L. Mencken was correct when he said that no one ever went broke underestimating the intelligence of the American people. So my hat goes off to Hemorrhoid. Let's go to the callers. Larry in Sacramento, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Michael. I had to call you today. As far as I'm concerned on radio and TV, you're the only one with the courage to tell the truth.
Let me say this. There are others who do a fairly good job. However, in commercial AM radio, it's very difficult to tell the truth without losing your stations or your sponsors, as you can see what happened to Rush for making a mistake in his case. So there are others who are very courageous and have a high degree of talent at what they do, but they have tremendous constraints. The only place you can really say it like it is on cable, frankly, where there's no control over what you say. So, you see, I have to navigate the commercial ice in order to do what I do. If you actually want to hear what I really think, you'll have to get it on cable where I don't appear at this time. But, Larry, thank you for the compliment. I'm sending you Trickle Down Tyranny.
Not so much because I need or want the revenue, but because I want and need the American nation that I love so much to survive. And the only way, you know, I don't want to repeat myself. I'm starting to sound like I'm repeating myself, and I don't like when I get that back in my ear. Let's go to the other callers who are hanging on with the other topics. Florida Debbie, you're on the Savage Nation. On line six, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Good evening, Dr. Savage. I know earlier you were talking about the show Luck, and I've been a longtime race tracker, and the show was not only offensive, but so unrealistic as to what the racetrack is really like in so many ways. I'm glad they canceled it.
Well, it was canceled, they say, because horses were dying, and the animal rights groups were getting uptight over it, and rightly so, because they were running these horses too hard. And they weren't treating these horses properly. But I believe that's just the front story for the failure of the series itself. Look, Dustin Hoffman was miscast as a gangster. The other guy who played the horse owner, horse trainer, Nick Nolte, was unintelligible. He was mumbling through it. And the storyline was unintelligible. And that's why it flopped. It had very, very little to do with the horses dying, in my estimation. Okay? New York, WOR. Michael, welcome to the program. What's on your mind, Michael?
All right, good evening. I canceled my HBO. The Luck was a bust. I also want to say you're a national treasure. And I also want to say I grew up in Coney Island, and in the news lately is the powers that be want to replace some of the boardwalk with concrete and plastics, I think is objectionable. And I want to see...
No, I hear you. No, you're a really down-to-earth, you're a realist kind of guy. And I do appreciate your commentary. I think your listenership is indicative of the fact that people who don't listen to baloney like the Savage Nation in plain English. You know, I took an HBO subscription when The Sopranos came out. I didn't even know about it. A friend of mine said, you got to watch it. I watched it, liked it, and I subscribed. Several times I wanted to cancel it over the years because of the offensive nature of most of the broadcasts, the racist comedians that they have on, mainly minority comedians, who are racist towards white people. I find
great idea, but I would also say I object to people using the term minority because ultimately each person is a minority of one. We're individuals.
Thank you.
And people try
absolutely. I wrote that in one of my books 30 years ago. The ultimate minority is the individual.
Well,
I'm a greater minority than any minority in this country because I speak the truth. That's the ultimate minority, by the way. Michael, I'm sending you Trickle Down Tyranny. Do you know that Showtime and HBO know that I have a major audience? They know I'm the most talented man in the media. And you know what they told my agent? We can't and won't have him on because he's a conservative. I don't know if you know any of this. We are living through the 1950s blacklist in a, let us say, in a magnified manner. We have a blacklist in Hollywood that is beyond anything that ever existed during the so-called Red Scare in the 1950s because... You see, the Red Scare was based upon reality. They were communists. They were working to undermine and overthrow the country. And there was every reason that J. Edgar Hoover was conducting the House of Un-American Activities Committee hearings. They should have been held, and we need them again in America. Instead, we got the exact opposite. I'm dreaming of the day that HUAC comes back and all of the fellow travelers are finally exposed for what they are. Those would be lobbyists for China. Those would be lobbyists from Congress who went to work for China just to begin with. But you don't even have to have a UAC. Just pick up the internet. Go to michaelsavage.com. The Washington Post has agreed to run a puff piece from the communist Chinese government on a daily or weekly basis that will completely whitewash their human rights disasters in China. How much worse does it get than the Washington Post going into business with the communist Chinese government? We don't need UAC. All you got to do is open a newspaper and you see UAC. Just look at the name of your newspaper and you have a UAC committee hearing right in front of your eyes.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now,
America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Have to listen to some of this audio, which includes President Obama calling Republicans flat earthers.
Lately, we've heard a lot of professional politicians, a lot of the folks who are, you know, running for a certain office, who shall go unnamed. They've been talking down new sources of energy. I guess they like gas guzzlers. They think that's good for our future. We're trying to move towards the future. They want to be stuck in the past. And we've heard this kind of thinking before. Let me tell you something. If some of these folks were around when Columbus set sail, they must have been founding members of the Flat Earth Society. They would not have believed that the world was round.
And here's former Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich speaking to the media before reporting for his 14-year prison sentence for attempting to sell Barack Obama's Senate seat. God, had he only succeeded, the world would be a better place.
There he is.
Here we go.
What did you say to your daughters? Tell me quickly.
What did you say to yours this morning? Let me say this. Here, real quick.
Governor.
Okay, I'm going to say a couple of quick things. First, saying goodbye is the hardest thing I've ever had to do. Heavy heart, clear conscience, but I have high hopes for the future. And one among the hopes is now you guys can go home and our neighbors can get their neighborhood back. I'll see you guys when I see it.
And Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, have you noticed her new hairdo? Calling the GOP extremists when it comes to women's rights? Well, that's something she wouldn't know much about.
Why extremists always focus on women remains a mystery to me. It is hard to believe, but even here at home, we have to stand up for women's rights and reject efforts to marginalize any one of us. And they want to control how we dress. They want to control how we act. They even want to control the decisions we make about our own health and our own bodies.
And here's what's on MichaelSavage.com, borders, language, culture, home of the Savage Nation. Notice to the American people. Obama's use of the U.S.-UK state dinner as re-election campaign prop is vulgar and insulting, says Niall Gardner of London. If you can believe it, the White House has invited Harvey Weinstein. Harvey Weinstein, the lowest slime bag to have ever invaded Hollywood, is in the White House at a state dinner calling Obama the greatest man the world has ever seen. That's why I say trickle-down tyranny. Stop them before they stop you. The one book you need to stop Obama before we all lose of our constitutional rights. Goldman Sachs lost $2.2 billion in share prices because of one op-ed from a former employee who called them greedy, well, etc. Did you hear about China taking over the Washington Post? That's right. The liberal Washington Post, the paper that broke the Watergate scandal, has partnered with the Chinese Communist Party. The Chinese Communist Party. To do out a new issue called China Watch. And that is amazing when you consider that their policies are almost the same. The only question is, why did they wait so long to get together? I mean, why did the liberals in the Washington Post not do this sooner is the only question. The People's Republic of China is actually more conservative than the American liberals are, if you actually analyze it. So congratulations to Chairman Mao for having finally broke through to the Washington Post in public. We know it's been going on behind the scenes for at least 30 years. Harvey Weinstein, the most vile man to have ever invaded Hollywood, says Obama is too humble. He says Obama's accomplishments far outweigh his esteem. Well, coming from Harvey Weinstein, we'll leave it at that. Principal in Massachusetts has replaced St. Patrick's Day with Old Green Day in order to be, quote, inclusive and diverse. I did not make that up. Warlord Karzai demands U.S. pull back now. I think we should pull out now so the warlord can get what he deserves. Finally, that series on HBO I've been warning you against, the lowest rated, most horrendous series ever made called Luck. finally canceled because Dustin Hoffman failed to draw more than 500,000 listeners per week. The lowest rated major HBO show in history. I guess an old man from Hollywood who waddles around doesn't make it as a gangster. Oh, they say it's because more horses have died. I would say it's not because of the horses. Uber lib Charlie Rose sued for exploiting his interns. You kidding? You think? Charlie Rose, the liberal, would exploit interns? Impossible to believe a liberal would do that. Pentagon probing $92 million recruitment fraud. Can you believe this? Obama's defense secretary forces the Marines to disarm in the war zone. Okay, Leon, you did a great job over there. Exiled Muslim hate preacher still broadcast to the UK. Girl kills self after judge forces her to marry Muslim rapist. Oh, I'm sorry, the word missing here is Muslim girl kills self after Muslim judge forces her to marry Muslim rapist. I'm reading from michaelsavage.com in case you haven't figured it out. On the bottom left, vile black racist entertainer describes O's birthday as black heaven. You didn't hear about this, didn't make it to the Washington Post? Have any reasons why? All this and more today, right here on the Savage Nation.
It was a story that I encouraged to be written. A lot of times stories generate from people's rant. Alex Burns wrote up one of my rants, which was looking at some of these polling numbers that have been out recently. The results from Mississippi showing a majority of Republicans think that President Obama might be Muslim. Well, it's not true. That's just wrong. Some of the concern about how come he doesn't do something about gas prices. Like, well, the president can't really control gas prices. To me, some of these poll results, they just seem stupid.
You know how much that irritates me? Well, just think how your throat would feel this spring without Pine Brothers softish throat drops. Remember Pine Brothers? Those soft, delicious throat drops we all grew up with, the ones your parents bought to soothe you when you had a sore throat that you couldn't stop eating after your throat got better? Well, they're back in natural honey and wild cherry flavors, and they're just as wonderful and effective as you can remember. Visit them on the web at pinebrothers.com. That's pinebrothers.com.
Savage.
Look, I want to talk to you about the most important book I've ever written. I believe it's going to be my last nonfiction book, Trickle Down Tyranny, Crushing Obama's Dream of the Socialist States of America. A lot of people in radio and elsewhere hawk books, and I can understand it. I've done it myself. This is the single most important book I have ever written. Why? Do you want the USA or the USS of eight? Do you want the United States of America to remain? Or would you like to see it become Obama's dream of the Union of Socialist States of America? That is the question. And I'm telling you, this is the one book that can stop Obama's tyranny. And that's why I ask you not to leave me in the lurch and not to leave America in the lurch. I need you to go to Amazon.com and buy an advanced copy today. The book won't be out for a while now, but I got to tell you something. Ask yourself these questions. And if you agree with me, then buy the book and show it to a friend. If you disagree with me, then vote for the first communist president America's ever had. While you celebrated on New Year's Eve, Obama stole your civil rights. Under the guise of fighting terrorism, Obama signed into law the National Defense Authorization Act, giving the federal military the authority to arrest any American citizen. With this unprecedented seizure of power, the most divisive and dangerous president in U.S. history eliminated both the Posse Comitatus Act and the writ of habeas corpus. It's so bad that even the liberal, uber-liberal ACLU was shocked, as was his own Justice Department. We now live in a dictatorship, an early Argentina of the 1970s, where the military now has almost supreme power over our lives and freedoms. Obama said, "Don't worry, I won't use this power." Do you believe him? I don't. The NDAA is the most anti-Freedom Act ever signed into American law, and the complicit media let it go almost unnoticed. So as I say to you, you can stop trickle-down tyranny from metastasizing. Do you believe that under Obama, poverty is rewarded, success is punished? Do you believe our worst enemies are praised while our allies are stiffed? Do you believe the military is used as a pawn? He just disarmed the U.S. Marines so Leon Faketa could go give a speech in Afghanistan? Do you believe our borders are descending into chaos? Do you believe corporations and cronies are making off with all the wealth and corporations such as GE pay no taxes? Well, Trickle-Down Tyranny is the one book you need to stop this emerging dictatorship. These 300 pages show you the dangerous laws and power grabs of the Obama regime and what we can do to stop this leftist gang from seizing another term in office. I can go on, and I will. Why do I say Trickle-Down Tyranny is the most important book I've ever written? Well, I start with this, advice to the next president, the Savage Worldview. Tell me if you disagree with this. Economies can be rebuilt, armies can be repopulated, but once a nation's pride is gone, it can almost never be restored. The loss of a nation's honor is something not even centuries can repair. The next president must love America. The next president must embody unequivocally everything that is good about a country, this country going back to its founding. In other words, the next president must be the exact opposite of Barack Obama. He must be a man of high character. Do you believe Obama's a man of high character, a man who invites a vile, racist comedian in, who boasted it was like black heaven, and there were only... I don't even want to go on about this. It's getting me sick. The tyranny that is emerging is not a joke, nor is it hyperbole. If you agree with me, go to Amazon.com and buy it, or wait for April 3rd and flood the bookstores. Buy three copies. Chapter 1, Advice to the Next President, The Savage World View. Chapter 2, Tyranny of a Naked Marxist Presidency. Chapter 3, Tyranny of the Government Media Complex. 4, Tyranny of the Treasurer. 5, Tyranny of Obama's Radical Accomplices. 6, Tyranny of Obama's Corporate Cronies. 7, Tyranny of the Egghead Wars. 8, Tyranny of Treating Our Friends Like Enemies and Our Enemies Like Friends. 8, Tyranny of Green Energy. 9, Tyranny of the Anti-Justice Department. 11, Crushing Obama's Cadre Before They Crush Us. It's all in Trickle-Down Tyranny. Now, what I want to do for you, when I pick up a book in a bookstore, I read the first paragraph and the last paragraph. So let me read you the last paragraph of Trickle-Down Tyranny, and if you agree with it, then go buy it. Barack Obama has taken over jobs, health care, the auto industry, student loans, and mortgages. He's wiped out habeas corpus in the name of national security. He's eliminated the Posse Comitatus Act. That is why you must crush the Obama steamroller. What I've delivered in this book is the most important analysis you'll ever read of why we must stop the tyrant in the White House now, before it's too late. If we allow Obama another 4 years, he will have destroyed our country. We're living under a crypto dictatorship right now. In Trickle-Down Tyranny, I've shown you the scope of the Obama takeover, and I've shown you how we can crush it before it crushes us. What I need you to do is go buy a copy right now on Amazon.com. Buy two copies and give one to a friend or a spouse or a relative. This is the last chance we have. The one book that can stop Obama's tyranny, Trickle-Down Tyranny. I'm Michael Savage, and I approve of this message. For hours today before my show, I was with my little dog, Teddy. It's a beautiful day, gorgeous weather, and I'm just enjoying it and this and that, watching the trees bloom. And I gave Teddy a little nose hair trim on his you know, mouth, his little poodle. When the hair grows in, he looks like a schnauzer, so I clip it off so he has a little pointy nose, and then I reward him with a piece of provolone cheese. He may not be a German, what do they call it? Is a poodle? A poodle's supposed to be German. They're actually French, I think. The French poodle's actually German, right, not French. But I think there may be a little Italian in him because he actually prefers provolone to all other cheeses. So we were playing today, and I was trimming his little face to make it look pointy while I leave all the other hair on his body out like a bear. And then I started to look at something else. You know, I'm always writing a book or two, right? So Trickle-Down Tyranny is finished. It's in the covers. It's coming out. I've been telling you about it. Next Christmas, I know I shouldn't talk about it, but I'm going to tell you why in a minute. It's a little political. I have a book that's going to come out about my childhood stories called Train Tracks. And I know it's going to be a smash hit for the Christmas holidays because the election will be over. Nobody will want to hear about politics. And these stories are real. And they're good. And some of them you've never heard or seen before. So I was writing one about my travels by train out to visit cousins in Pennsylvania when I was a little boy. And how my mother would pick us up on Wednesdays in PS 48 in the Bronx. You know, Thanksgiving holiday, you're off Thursday or Friday. But she'd come get us around 11 in the morning on Wednesday. From the time I went to school at 9 o'clock till 11 felt like 24 hours to me. Till she finally got us. But I was so happy to get out of that school and go down by subway to Penn Station, and then get into the big, steaming, hissing locomotive. Now, think about what this is like to a kid 6 years old, how big a locomotive looks to a little kid. And I talked about the whole train ride and going to visit my cousins and my aunt and my uncle. But little did I know,
I had an uncle out there. I didn't know anything about him. I found an obituary written about him recently. I only knew he was a factory worker. They were poor, and they had to leave New York, and he took a job as a factory worker in order to make a living, and he worked his way up to becoming a foreman. From being a foreman in a factory, he got into Democrat politics, and then he got a job with the state, some kind of, I don't know, the cigarette tax revenue. I don't know what he did, but he did nice, you know, did very nice for himself. Didn't become rich, but the man had lots of friends. He was loved in the town. He was a Democrat ward guy, like a ward leader. He looked like a Max Bayer, big guy, nice guy, affable. Everyone loved him. But I found out that Uncle Abe dared back a Republican once. Now, remember, this is a factory town in Pennsylvania. All blue-collar factory town in those days. You were considered a turncoat if you helped a Republican. He helped a Republican, got the Republican elected, and they threw him out of his job. They took away his seat as a zoning guy. They threw him off the board. The Democrats got even with him because he dared step out of line. And instead of rolling over, I read in the obituary that he ran against the guy who threw him off the board, came back 2 years later, and then said to everybody, if you do to me or anyone else what he did to me, because I backed the guy who I believe is good, he said, I'll do to you what I did to him, and I'll get you thrown out of office. I didn't know he had it in him. I only knew him as a nice, easygoing guy who I love very much. I didn't know much about him. I had no idea. But what I'm saying is, looking back at this story from the eyes of a Michael Savage, who was now at the age that he died or close to it, I say to myself, look at this. There must be politics somewhere in the family genealogy. He was a small town guy who was a big shot, you know, a big shot in a little pond, big fish in a little pond. And the fact of the matter is, he actually was a man who spoke the truth. They said he told you exactly the way he felt. So I was very proud to actually find that in reading his obituary. I found it in a crumpled old clipping in a closet I have up here as I was writing this story today for my book, which will come out next spring, called Train Tracks. So that's where I'm at today. I'll be right back.
The regime in Iran is a very rational regime.
Do you think Ahmadinejad is rational?
The answer is yes. Not exactly our rationale, but I think that he is rational.
So do you think they're rational enough that they are capable of backing down from this?
No doubt that the Iranian regime is maybe not exactly rational based on what I call Western thinking. But no doubt that they are considering all the implications.
Former Mossad chief Meir Dagan was recently interviewed by 60 Minutes, and he set off a real controversy when he said that the Iranian regime is rational. Joining us right now on the Savage Nation to discuss this is former CIA spy in the Iranian Revolutionary Guards, Reza Khalili, who was obviously using a voice changer to protect his identity. Reza Khalili, welcome to the Savage Nation. Thank you for your service to the world.
Michael, it's great to be on your show again, and it's great to be talking to you.
So give my audience a little background on Meir Dagan.
Mr. Dagan is the ex-Mossad boss, and he's been outspoken against Netanyahu for a while. And he's been opposing Netanyahu and Barak with their policies of confrontation with the Palestinians, and specifically with the Islamic regime's goal of obtaining the nuclear bomb. And Dagan believes that any attack on Iran, then it would result in a regional war. And so he's been outspoken against Netanyahu. But my concern is that his statements are in line with those statements of American officials who back President Obama's policies towards Iran, policies of negotiation. And so my gut feeling tells me that some friendly people in America had him do the interview on the 60 Minutes, which was right after Netanyahu's visit to Washington and his speech at AIPAC that Israel controls its own destiny. So there are there are two forces within Israel. One who wants to secure the security of Israel and make sure that Iran doesn't get the bomb. They understand the threat. And another is to vacillate and on the side of appeasement, giving more time and negotiation.
Well, what is this regime really like? I mean, we know that they're crazy and they sound like Hitler to me. But are they really as dangerous as they make themselves out to be?
But you see, that's the failure of the West. They still haven't understood it. It's not the economy. It is the ideology. No matter how much negotiation and sanctions you do, you can't change that ideology and belief that the West needs to be destroyed, that Islam needs to conquer the world. And this is the center of their philosophy. The radicals who rule Iran, they believe that Allah is on their side, that all the current events in the Middle East is a verification that they are on the right path, and that this is an Islamic awakening that's going to result in conquering the world. And this is a very dangerous ideology, especially when they are when they have over 1,000 ballistic missiles, when they are working on intercontinental ballistic missiles with the collaboration of China and North Korea, which can reach U.S. shores, and when they are so close to getting the nuclear bomb.
Is there any chance that Israel or the United States, for that matter, could survive with a nuclear-armed Iran?
Well, no. I think that would be the biggest failure of the West if they do not understand the seriousness of this threat, if they believe that mad mutually assured destruction policy is going to work with this regime. You see, they've said over and over that the West loves life. But we love martyrdom. This is exact quote from them, from the Iranian officials, from the Islamic leaders of Iran. And so if they can threaten world stability and global economy right now, just imagine what they can do with a nuclear bomb. And plus, Iran sits at the region which is essential for world stability, and that's the Persian Gulf. 40% of world's energy lies there, and the majority of the world's energy is in that part of the world. Any nuclear detonation, any nuclear exchange would shut down the flow of energy from that region for decades, perhaps, and it would collapse the global economy. We would see the worst depression humanity has ever seen. So just that fact alone should motivate us to stop the leaders of Iran or any other country in that region to get their hands on the nuclear bomb.
Tell my audience as much as you can about your experience as a spy in the Iranian Revolutionary Guards.
Well, as I've explained in my book, A Time to Betray, I was educated here. I was born and raised in Tehran, Iran, came to U.S. In early 70s, studied here, and then went back after the revolution, believing that there could be a full democratic process. But when I saw the crimes, when I saw the horrific events taking place, the raping of women and boys and girls, executions, and how they were suppressing the people and their ideology to expand that belief throughout the world, I reached out to the U.S. authorities, and one thing led to the other, and I became a CIA agent, passing information to the West from within Iran, from within the Revolutionary Guards. But my disappointment and my frustration is that the West still doesn't understand this threat. And we are inching towards the point of no return where humanity could be lost, where the destruction to humanity could be so deep that we could not recover. And I hope that our leaders wake up to this threat, to the reality, and help the Iranian people free themselves from this evil that's ruling them right now.
You know, I talk about all of this in trickle-down tyranny, but I'd like your prediction of what will end up happening in regards to the Iranian nightmare.
Well, as I revealed recently, there are some secret negotiations going on behind the scene between the Islamic regime, with the help and support of Russia and Mr. Putin, with the West, again trying to engage the West into some lengthy negotiation back and forth, buying more time for the regime where they can successfully weaponize their missiles with nuclear warheads. And this upcoming meetings in April, it's going to be a deciding factor for the West to understand that the Islamic leaders are not serious about negotiations, and the Islamic leaders are determined to let the West know that they can give up some of their 20% enrichment stock, but they have to have the West verify their right to enrichment of uranium and continuation of the nuclear program. If that happens, then everything is lost. We've got to be determined. We've got to be serious about this, and we've got to put a condition that they've got to stop enriching uranium. They've got to stop their nuclear program, period. And then only at that time there can be ways to approach further negotiation and relieving of sanctions.
Where can we read more?
Your listeners can read more about my articles, op-eds, interviews, all on my website at timetobetray.com. I do reveal the secrets of this regime and what's going on behind the scenes almost on a daily basis.
Reza Khalili, thanks for being with us on the Savage Nation.
Michael, it's great to talk to you. You can find my book on my website at timetobetray.com. And the title is A Time to Betray, and it's available on Amazon and in every bookstore.
I'm Michael Savage. We'll be right back.
Savage.
Robbie in New York on WOR. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, hi. I'm a Jewish television writer from L.A., and you said something that just freaked me out. They had to pull the car over and call the show right away. And bear with me for a second. I'll spit this out really quickly. That, as you know, the hatred for conservatives in L.A. and the entertainment business is so corrosive. It's just vicious. The very first night I ever called your show, that night I got calls from people, Jewish friends of mine, that said, don't you know about Savage? I said, yeah, he's great. Well, that wasn't what I was supposed to say, and I wasn't the most popular kid in school after that, or the most popular writer in the writer's room at the studio. And I've had people, I've been like, that won't be seen with me in certain trendy industry restaurants. But I had to give to your legal fund under someone else's name, and it still continues, but I still continue to call your show. And I don't want
so,
to
in other words, the blacklist that they talked about so succinctly is what they've conducted now in Hollywood, now that they are running it, they are the fascists of today.
It's a version of that. What it really is people don't want to be seen with you. They're afraid it'll hurt your career, you know, hurt their career.
Yeah, have you ever had any big hits?
I've worked on big hit shows, yeah, definitely.
Good. Okay, so what'd you call about?
Well, here's what I called about. When you said Angel of Death, Michael, I freaked out. I couldn't even see straight. There's things I've been trying to tell you, and it's hard because I've tried to drop clues, like, for the past year or so, no success. And there's some things I know about, and I can't say much more than that.
Well, you mean from Hollywood, right? From the Caesars of Hollywood? Is that what you're referring to?
No, talking about in the books you've written.
No, but are you saying that the Angel of Death is being sent from some of the Caesars of Hollywood?
No, I think it's just what you said. You had a bad feeling, you know, like a zest.
Yeah, but it went away. It went away. It was 2 weeks it was hovering.
Michael, I think you're more on the nose than even you realized. I said to you before, I've ghostwritten tons and tons of political speeches, and some in the past for senators I'd be ashamed to even mention to you, but thank you, your show has cured me of that. But I've gotten some incredible insights into how these minds work. And like you said, I mean, to sum up everything you said in like 5 years, about the Democratic Party isn't about politics. And when you think about it, it's just simply a temper tantrum by the baby boomers. You know what I mean? It's not.
Well, that's a nice way to put it. I would go a few steps farther than you. You're being rather nice to them.
Yeah. Well, I'm on your show. I got to be careful.
Right. And I hope I understand. So, what's the Angel of Death thing that scared that you were saying with the Chinese fable?
Well, the fable, first of all, but
yes.
The Chinese thing is this. Yes, it's terrible about Andrew and everything else, but it's like he had something bigger he was shooting for. He's not a guy just out to make money. And it's almost like the good news, bad news is the bad news, God forbid what happened to Andrew. The good news is it's waking people up again. Because I think, like you say, the country's headed in a strange way right now.
You see, Robbie, I disagree with you. Those of us who have thought this way
have been awakened for quite a while and our consciousness has been turned on. Do you think that the average public that pays attention to the dreck that's put out there by your friends in Hollywood give a rat's behind about the death of Andrew Breitbart?
Oh, of course not. Look, you understand. I think I understand. But most of the country doesn't. And it's waking them up. And I think, you know, Michael, there's a verse.
They're not waking up. It's only being covered here and there. I must say I was shocked to see that the death of Andrew Breitbart was on the front page of USA Today. But, you know, it was covered as dies of heart attack. Okay, sad story. Let's move on to one of the monkeys who died. That's a far bigger obituary for maybe 3-4 weeks.
Of course, you're giving me a whole new way to look at everything. And it's like I can't be comfortable with just going along with it now. I feel
No, you can't. No, you can never enjoy another meal after listening to me.
No. Well, I do. You talk about food all the time.
Well, I read the Bible, and it says a man's lot is supposed, you're supposed to enjoy your family and your food. That's all. I mean, I can't quote the Bible exactly, but you are supposed to take pleasure in the simple things.
You are. But, Michael, when you get frustrated, you go, all right, that's enough. No more politics. Let's talk about Italian food and Teddy. That's it. No more politics. Like 5 minutes later, you're talking about politics. You know, you can't go through lines.
Well, because to me, there's politics in a meatball or politics in a pot sticker. Wherever I go, I see politics.
Oh, absolutely. You know, there's a verse from a song that I just want to read it to you quickly. I've written it down because I always think of you whenever I think of it. And it applies to Andrew Breitbart and to you right now. It's from a song by the singer, kind of folk singer, Don McLean. And it's about Vincent van Gogh. And the verse is, "Now I think I know what you tried to say to me and how you suffered for your sanity and how you tried to set them free. They would not listen. They're not listening still. Perhaps they never will." Yeah. And it's almost like that's the conscience of what you're doing.
Let me put it to you this way without playing the martyr. If I were a much younger man, I don't think I could handle what I'm doing. I couldn't take this much longer. But I am so used to being an outcast. I am so used to being not part of anything that I become bigger than any anything I could have been a part of. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah.
In other words, any of the parts that I wanted to belong to that wouldn't have me because of my independent mindset and because of my outspokenness and, frankly, my abrasive ways, truthfully, they did me a favor. All they did was turn me into something bigger.
They did. You're 100% right. And it's like it's not like you're better or worse. You're above both those things. You're not beholden to anyone. You know, you've got your,
But I am. Don't think that I am not concerned about the situation to the extent that you think I'm being cavalier about it. In other words, if there's even a scintilla of a chance that he was knocked off by forces to the left, which is what we're talking about, there are lone wolves, there are organized groups of murderers and assassins, there are people who are crazy who didn't like him, whatever. Don't think that I don't think about them. I do all the time. I'd be crazy not to, wouldn't I?
Sure, of course. Well, that's why, like I said, there are things,
That in the Vietnam War, we had soldiers who were sent into villages, and they were sent to kill in any political operative of the communist parties. Any political operative was sought out and killed. And likewise, the communists, when they took over cities like Hue, they killed anyone with eyeglasses. They killed teachers, doctors, lawyers, cops. Did you know that? They killed their wives and children. In fact, I don't even want to mention it, but I have a friend. I don't see him. I haven't seen him for over a year. He was one of the early Green Berets into that city. He never got over what he saw when his foot, as he was walking through the town of Wei after the communists had swept through, his foot tripped on what he thought was a root, and he started to dig, and it was a child's hand. And the more he dug, he found a mass grave of dead babies and mothers and fathers and cops and firemen and teachers and engineers and architects. Anybody with eyeglasses was killed by the Chinese. And he never got over it. He still has recurring nightmares about what he saw. He knows what lurks behind the ribs that Andrew Breitbart ate. He knows what lurks behind the wine list that Andrew Breitbart enjoyed, if you know what I'm saying.
I have to get this information to you somehow. I can't. Like I said, I'm sticking my neck.
Are you sending me a message that I'm in danger and you know it?
No. No.
I don't mean from you. I don't mean from you. Because I've heard rumors from L.A. from people high up in Hollywood who were trying to send me a message
that some of the Caesars hate me so much that they were out to get me any way they could. So that's when I started to attack them even more. The minute I heard it, I started to say their names over and over again on the radio show. I think that they're the most vile people that the world has ever seen. I think they're far more dangerous than some of the worst people we've ever heard about, because they've not only poisoned the body politic, they've poisoned the mind, and they've destroyed an entire generation of people with their filth.
Oh, it's terrible.
You know and I know that the sewer pipe that comes out of Hollywood has destroyed most of the world.
Oh, absolutely. You're right.
You remember the kid who went crazy in the school last week that was forgotten already? He was bullied and he shot four and he killed three? Remember I was asking on Monday, who's responsible? Do you think it could be the Caesars of Hollywood who was sitting there at the Academy Awards, wherever they were the other day, the Academy Awards? The pompous fools that were sitting there with every movie since 1980 had a young person with a gun in it. Every starlet had a gun. Every harlot had a gun. Every warlock had a gun. Everyone was shown with a handgun, and now we have handgun violence throughout America. You're telling me that these people in Hollywood have no blame? I mean, there was a time when they controlled themselves, and then there was a time that there was a self-censorship, and then there was a time when there was a film board. We don't have any of that anymore. Before the last head of the Motion Picture Association, there was a form of self-censorship. You know and I know there's no such thing as a motion picture board anymore. Am I right?
Oh, absolutely.
With the assault upon Hollywood by men like others, other barbarians, you know that there is no Motion Picture Association.
That's a joke. You know, that's so long gone. Michael, I want to send you an email or something and try to...
The Motion Picture Association in Hollywood is the equivalent of a shamus in a pickle factory. Savage.